Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And this our season finale. And yes, for once we actually do mean the term in the proper sense, which I'll explain in a moment. God, have I been looking forward to this.
Yeah, you're the only one, because while this is your childhood, fond over memory, it is my childhood nightmare. And I think the difference is just like the slight age gap between us, because while it came out while you were a child, it existed just before I was born. And so it was this ominous, creeping thing for years.
Now, just quick bit of housekeeping before the fun starts. As I said, this is our season finale. After this episode, we'll be going on a bit of a hiatus, willingly this time. And then for next season, we're going to record all of the episodes at once. And then Crash will edit all of them. And then once they're all finally edited, they will all come out on a weekly basis. So for that segment, we actually may be able to finally have discovered the secret of a consistent release schedule.
Yes. Finally, the Holy Grail will be within our grasp. We just have to slay a few fucking dragons. That's not hard.
And next season, Crash gets to try to drive me insane with the film choices, so everybody wins.
It's going to be terrible. I can't wait.
But for now, this final choice is a movie that, as we said, was very much a large part of my childhood. When I was in second grade, I would literally end every day with my best friend. We'd start out on the playground. We'd be like battling flying monkeys and wheelers. And she was Dorothy. I was Dorothy's cousin, because there's no male leads in this franchise. And what 7-year-old wants to play the Scarecrow?
It could be Tip. I'll get into it a little bit later, but I accuse this movie of Tip Eraser. Anyway.
But with all that said, this is the glorious Disney insanity that was 1985's Return to Oz.
This summer, Walt Disney Pictures presents a motion picture fantasy adventure beyond your fondest imagination. You'll be transported miraculously back to the enchanted land of Oz, that magical kingdom beloved by young and old for generations.
It's just a yellow brick.
No, Belina, you don't understand. This was the Yellow Brick Road.
You'll share with Dorothy Gale the shock of finding everything mysteriously changed.
What's happened to everybody?
And you'll delight with her discovery of four wonderful new friends who band together against a wicked queen and the dreaded Gnome King. This is the Oz you haven't seen before, and this is the Oz you'll want to visit again and again. From Walt Disney Pictures comes a whole new world of entertainment.
Just fly back to Kansas.
Return to Oz.
Now, you said that was the only version of the trailer with the original music, and I'm just going to play a tidbit right now of some of the other offerings. Horrendous. There's something necessary about the original soundtrack for this. It's not necessarily like super memorable soundtrack. I didn't have any like sudden flashbacks of like, oh, I remember this song when I was watching this movie, but it's necessary for it. It is its context. You cannot strip away and use some other goddamn crap. What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck? Anyway.
Yeah, no, I honestly, I hate fan trailers. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that you're, with this movie as an example, you're taking scenes from a 1985 film and scoring them with more modern music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I see what you're going for. It just sounds wrong.
Yeah.
And on top of that, none of y'all are capable of proper sound mixing, so please stop.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, so people make the joke about, like, Tenet was all vibe, no plot. This movie has a plot. It's kind of cobbled together aspects of the plot from the books to make. It's not a sequel to Wizard of Oz. It's not a direct adaptation of the books. It's a third thing. You know, like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or, you know, any other Alan Moore adaptation. So it's this fascinating, like, thing that is all vibe. It is all vibe. And so if you take away one aspect of the vibe, such as, say, the soundtrack, you kill what is at the heart of this film. And what I find terrifying about it is the same thing that you find enjoyable about it, is the same thing that makes it work and made it fail critically and financially. It is vibe. And that vibe is a bad mushroom trip.
Well, I will say this, though. It's a fascinating thing how this clearly takes place. This does clearly take place after the Wizard of Oz. It mentions the fact that this is Dorothy's, like, return. She has been there before. This Dorothy is 6 years younger, but she's been there before.
I love that this movie, like, okay, the first Wizard of Oz begins with Dorothy Gale singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, you know, while, like, 1930s camera work just slowly ekes out this weird, you know, a glow around everything, and everything's so soft and subtle and everything. And this one's just like, she's fucking crazy. Let's lobotomize her. Right to the goddamn medical abuse. Like, holy shit.
Oh yeah. So Return to Oz takes place about 6 months after the original movie. Now starring Fairuza Balk. So this is the completion of our Fairuza Balk hat trick. for those of you who have been with us for an extended period, we with the two Kraft movies. Yay. And now this, we're there. So Fairuza Balk debuts as a 10-year-old Dorothy Gale. Quick side note, Judy Garland was 16 when she played the role. And additional bit of trivia, Judy Garland is also, as far as I know, the only actress to play Dorothy Gale twice.
When did she play her again?
So Cecil B. DeMille had, amongst other things, a radio program called the Lux Radio Theater, where they would take popular movies at the time and bring them onto radio as one-hour dramas.
Mm-hmm.
And often they would bring in the lead actors who played the same roles in the film and have them perform the radio version. So they brought Judy Garland in to do the radio this radio version anyway, because God knows how many there actually are, of The Wizard of Oz.
That's really cool, actually. You know, obviously it was an abuse of the studio system, if you've read anything about her career and how they made her, like, essentially, well, she was a slave to the studio system in body and mind. But that's kind of really cool, where it's like, you know, it's the Depression. I don't have money to go to a fucking theater. Oh, look, it's the radio. Boy, howdy. Ain't that dandy. And I really like, obviously it wasn't intended at the time, but someone's career eventually goes there. Firouza Balk as Dorothy Gale is fantastic because this really is a goth version of Oz. And I'm kind of surprised that it never caught on as like a hot topic thing. Like, there's money in them hells.
I see where you're coming from. And that being said, though, I think I know what the problem essentially was, which was that aside from the movie going dangerously close to, if not over budget, for pretty much the entire run of the production, to the point that director Walter Murch was fired from the film by Disney. And the only reason he got to finish the film was the man had friends in high places, shall we say, by the names of George Lucas and Steven Spielberg.
Wait, then that just confuses me even more. Where's the merchandising? Where's the Jack Pumpkinhead t-shirts? Like, come the fuck on.
But by the time the film was done, and I think roughly, I'd say late post-production, probably just before distribution, there was a change of administration at Walt Disney Studios, and that new administration had no faith in this movie whatsoever. Which, when you also add in the fact that, you know how the only reason Fox was putting out Fantastic Four films was to keep the copyright?
Mm-hmm.
That's how this movie happened.
Well, at least they put more effort into this than Fox ever did any Fantastic Four film, any four of those fantastic films.
This is true.
Especially the first one. Oh, bless.
The movie starts like that opening shot where it's panning in through the window, and then we find out that it's actually the mirror, a reflection of the window. It's so Twilight Zone-esque where, as you mentioned, this is a very much a more gothic version of the Wizard of Oz world. That opening shot tells you immediately what you're in for.
Yeah, like the first Wizard of Oz is shot very fucking straightforward. There are no tricks in there. If they want you to see something, they're just going to show it. It's going to be very fucking obvious and overt and plainly there. There's no camera trickery whatsoever. This one immediately is just like, I am a dishonest film. Everything that you expect to happen, no. You know, it's great because this movie really does keep you on your toes as things go weird and creepy and reference things in books that if at best you read when you were a child, but likely actually didn't read past the first one. And therefore it's like, I don't know, being thrown into the middle of Warhammer 40K lore. And you're just like, what the sweet Jesus does any of this have to do with anything? But it's all important. Oh, God.
It's all important, but there's also so much that, as you had mentioned, just seems to be thrown in, cobbled together, kind of last second.
Yeah, like, I saw a list of, cameos from the book that are in it, and it's like, they're in the last scene when all the residents of Oz come around and are, like, celebrating. And it's like, okay, so if you're a real fucking Oz nerd, I mean a real fucking Oz nerd, maybe you can point out a dozen characters that are apparently drawn from other books and everything. And it's like, oh my God, it's the Merry Man of March. I don't know who the fuck that is. It's a clown. And it's just, you know, you have to respect the amount of attention that this film gave while also just being like, but fuck that shit.
Oh, and now we start with Piper Laurie's aunt M, and we find out that Dorothy basically has not slept for like 6 months. She looks pretty good for a 10-year-old who has not slept in all this time, but sure. And
brave choice to immediately address the obvious trauma that would come with what the fuck happened to you? At the very best, if it is all entirely true, she was fucking enslaved by a witch. That shit sticks with you.
And that's after being kidnapped by a force of nature.
Yeah, and that's after accidentally killing someone. Listen, she went through some shit.
And we get this setup where we're introduced to characters like the chicken Bolina, who we're going to get there later. Oh, trust me, we're going to get there. And we find out that they're struggling to deal with Dorothy's trauma, which a farmhouse in 1899, totally understandable.
Well, at least they actually tried something instead of like a whooping.
True. But like you have the conversation where Em reminds Dorothy, you know, what do we keep telling you about Oz? And Dorothy's like, don't talk about it. Side note, as someone who works with children, and yes, I know my knowledge is 100 years more advanced from this story, but don't do that. I can't tell you how much I hate it when parents do that. instead of letting her work things out and, you know, talking with her, they decided to essentially arrange to take Dorothy to an asylum, which was, you know, the thing at the time.
you know, take her to see a shrink, give her some cocaine. It's all cool. She'll be fine.
And so they drop her off at the asylum. Em leaves, and as Dorothy is dealing with Dr. Worley and Nurse Ratchet, I mean Wilson, my first thought was, no one in this asylum has ever actually dealt with a child patient, have they?
Now, this is just how you dealt with kids back in the day.
Because I'm literally just sitting there going, okay, you're literally doing everything wrong. And I mean everything.
No, it's all right. He's a doctor.
Like we meet the electric machine that Dr. Worley, I would like to note, is far too proud of. And as he's explaining the machine to Dorothy, he's pointing out that, oh, see, look, it has a face. Here's its eyes. Here's its nose. Here's its mouth, and so on and so forth. And I'm sitting there going, yes, but it is still terrifying.
Yeah, now you've just, like, humanized it. So when it causes her great pain and stress, she can hate at it. Like, it stares at her the whole time as it cooks her. Wonderful. Yes. Good work, doctor. Excellent. Bedside manner.
Yeah. And then we come to Nurse Wilson, where they put her on a stretcher to wheel her to her room for some reason. And I just loved how just that moment where she's like, you may have a nap if you wish.
It's going to take us 30 seconds to wheel you down the hall.
Like, what? Everything that this asylum does, no!
Yeah. And, like, I get it. It's set up for later. Fine. It's a child working out their trauma. All right. But, like, it feels so forced in the script, and then it feels so oddly, like, Dickensian villain. It's fascinatingly over the top in a way where you're like, no, this works for a children's movie, but the second you try to think about it on like the serious level it almost wants to go for, it falls apart entirely. It's just because, like, it's not long. It's 113 minutes long. It just wants to, like, get the story out, as you say, maintain the rights and move on. And so it has these really interesting ideas and then kind of goes, fuck it. Just again, it goes, fuck it.
Now, with all that, there is one idea that I don't know about you, but I actually had a problem with this. I wish this had been somehow done in a different way, which is we first meet Emma Ridley as Ozma in the asylum in the real world, where she helps Dorothy to escape. And as much as I'm not a fan of The Wizard of Oz, I will give it this, which is that movie does do, especially for something filmed at that time, a really good job of making it ambiguous as to whether Dorothy's adventure actually happened or was in her imagination.
Mm.
And I just felt like by bringing Ozma into the real world, you're setting up the fact that Oz is an actual place that she does actually go to. And especially with a lot of the themes that stuff that come up later, I really wish that had not happened.
Yeah, I do agree with that. It the reading I always got on it was that it was kind of just this random girl who was also at the institution. Like, maybe she died in the storm. Wouldn't that be neat? But, like, the way that they show flashes of her, it's not true. That's just not what is actually happening. As you say, they have tipped their hand. Oz is real and somehow some other place. And it's just, like, it's the difference between Stephen King's The Shining and the Dark Tower series. The Shining's great because you're really not entirely sure if he's just really fucking alcoholic and abusive. Maybe that's all that's happening. But then you get to the Dark Tower and it's like, no, there's actually a Dark Lord and an entire religion. And here, let me go through these 13 fucking books so that you can understand every minutia point. And it's like, that's what this does. It strips away a bit of the mystery of it by going so hard into being like, no, it is real. And here's some other shit you haven't seen. And it's like, that's all some, you know, that's all really interesting shit. It really is. I love these characters, TikTok and like the queen with a thousand heads and all this, the gnome king looks really fucking cool, but it's all like, it's almost hollow. That was my outpouring of response to that.
And just to kind of keep that thought going a bit, when they finally attach Dorothy to the machine, I would have preferred that they were able to actually turn the thing on before the lightning and the thunderstorm hit.
It should have probably been at least the exact same moment. So it's like, okay, maybe all of this is in her head as it goes zap, 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 zap. Or if it happens a little bit, just a moment after, and maybe it's tied to the fire that starts, then okay, I can understand that. Having a literal like electric invention in the scene and there later being a fire, like immediately after it's supposed to be used, but those two things not being connected, it's just, it needed another pass. That's all. Because a tight would have meant the doctor causes the place to burn down himself with his invention that he is so proud of. But it's unrelated.
Yeah, no, and especially considering the doctor's final fate at the end of the movie, it's like, yeah, I really wish you'd gone that route instead.
Yeah.
Particularly with a Mandela effect that I had with the movie, which was that after she arrives in Oz in a chicken coop that suddenly gets magically buoyant and apparently teleports an actual chicken, which is kind of amazing in and of itself.
I mean, you gotta accept some things in this movie because of how fucking crazy everything else is, but that chicken coop looks really fucking silly.
And I particularly appreciated how Belina is suddenly just there.
And what a great character. Not exactly well written or deeply written, but just annoying enough that they kind of become the audience surrogate, complaining about what is occurring and commenting on how ridiculous some of it is. And it's like, yes, thank you for having the batshit insane idea of having a talking chicken instead of a dog that goes bark.
The Mandela effect that I had, that, God, I wish they could have done this, was I had a vivid memory of a scene of Oz itself being like just destroyed, like chunks of land literally being just ripped up and pulled into the air. Which I think when you add in how much memory and imagination comes into Dorothy's adventure in Oz this time around, the fact that they're basically trying to use electricity to pull out the bad dreams and essentially erase the memory of Oz from Dorothy's mind, you could have really built the idea of maybe Dorothy's second adventure in Oz is her imagination fighting to hold on to these things.
Yeah, like, as you say, parts of them floating away. It's a fragmentation of the memory. And the ruin, I really like the ruin. I had kind of forgotten how ruined everything was in this. It's a post-apocalyptic film that happens to have a happy, everything's fine after all ending. But for the most part, shit is fucked. It's as if a bomb went off and, you know, everyone's been turned to a statue. It's kind of like this middle ground between Hiroshima and like Mount Vesuvius, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's eerie as shit. It's super creepy. And it's a really interesting idea of like, how do we reapproach this thing? How about we blow it up and then wander around the ruins for a while?
And but they blew it up, if not downright erased stuff, because like there was that moment when shortly after Dorothy and Belina arrive in Oz, where we revisit Dorothy's old house from the original story.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the scene that I would use to make a case for a Wizard of Oz multiverse, because where did that house actually land in the first movie?
Yeah, Munchkin Land?
Literally town square of Munchkin Land.
Oh yeah, right in the at the very like origin of the Yellow Brick Road, right? Like
yep.
Smack dab. And then it gets kind of shuffled off during the musical number.
And yes, the Yellow Brick Road is still there. It looks like a worm from Dune took a joyride underneath it, but that's a whole other thing. But apparently fuck the Munchkins.
Yeah. Well, like that's another aspect of it's like bizarre post-apocalyptic post-war scene where it's like, no one talks about what happened to the Munchkins. No one wants to talk about what happened to the Munchkins.
Oh yeah. No, like I only bring it up because it adds to that idea of, yes, this takes place after the first movie, but it's not a sequel. It's like down here and like two steps over to the right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's Fox MCU.
Kind of prefer Marvel movies.
We are Marvel.
Yeah. But you know, you're Marvel licensed by Fox. It's like if the Beatles were produced by Nickelback. It's music, but it sucks.
Hey, that's it. I'm done. I've had it with all this Nickelback hating, right? You think that makes you cool with the cool kids in school, Fred?
No, it just makes me right.
It doesn't.
They're overproduced, formulaic, ear garbage.
Oh, really? You know who might disagree with that? Facts. 50 million albums worldwide. 11th best-selling musical act of all time. Billboard's most successful rock group of the last decade. 6 Grammy nominations, 12 Juno Awards. Those count. 6 Billboard Music Awards, 2 American Music Awards, 1 People's Choice Award, Canadian, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Sorry.
I thought we were just having fun. I didn't realize it was
You gotta say, you were nicer as a kid.
Once we get to the Ruin of Oz, this is where we start my fan theory that Bolina was secretly an agent of Ozma, and I will not be told otherwise.
I can accept that. I like that. That would make more sense because at least it involves some sort of agency to the plot. Whereas, I know that it's Dorothy Gale. She kind of falls into plots. She gets told what to do. She follows the quest line. She gets to the end of the quest line. She turns around, follows another quest line. That's just what happens. But having her led around by a chicken in a magical post-apocalyptic hellscape, a secret, brilliant chicken, secret agent chicken, that's fantastic. And I don't know if it makes the movie better, but I prefer it.
Oh, yeah. If you really think about it, when Dorothy first finds that key, if I remember right, it was in Bolina's chicken coop, or Bolina essentially leads her to the key.
Yeah. No, it was in her chicken coop. Yeah. Or no, it was just on the ground near it. Yeah. Anyway.
And then we get to the ruins of the Emerald City. Dorothy encounters the Wheelers.
Which, again, that's the bed. But then someone had to sit down and come up with the Wheelers. And, obviously, L. Frank Baum did his part. But the production had to come up with this idea. And it's we have to make psychedelic versions of bedstands from a nightmare hospital.
Yeah.
And they're people. And they're also stormtroopers, but kind of punk gang members. Here's a small budget. Show me what you got. And what came out was nightmarish as fuck. But also kind of looked like they belonged in a couple of music videos from the 80s. They felt very MTV.
Yeah. And as Dorothy and Bolina are running from the Wheelers, They come to that dead end with what turns out to be a secret door, and who's the one who suggests the key?
Yeah, the chicken.
She is an agent.
Well, it's necessary, or else the plot would never actually get anywhere.
Yeah. And also, frankly, I feel like if Bolina was the one to give some of the exposition explaining things that Dorothy was doing, that would have, to me, made more sense, simply because for a place that Dorothy has been to once,
yeah,
she knows an awful lot.
Yeah, yeah. And that's inescapable, but also it should be shocking to her. And the actor seems capable of it, so I just must assume that they didn't bother to put it in the character. There should be more shock and kind of revulsion and horror instead of okay, let's just go to the next thing. Okay, let's just go to the next thing.
Exactly. There was that one moment in the asylum where you see Dorothy turn on the light in her room for the first time and she jumps.
Yeah.
Because, of course, this kid has never been exposed to electricity. So it makes perfect sense. It's a nice touch and shows that, yeah, that's an aspect of the character that Fairuza Balk could have handled.
There definitely should have been more of that. And again, I understand small budget, director got fired, and they only made it to keep the license. If they had truly believed in this movie will have been expanded in those aspects, I feel, because they are there.
And as we eventually figure out what's happened, we meet TikTok, the worst designed army of Oz in history. Wonderful character, but if you really think about it, there's nothing practical about that design.
I mean, he's effective, but he also looks like those giant candy vending machines they used to have in malls in the early 90s.
That said, though, I do have to give it to the actors who were in the TikTok suit. Because as I understand it, that was accomplished by having a gymnast in the suit walking on their hands backwards.
Oh my God, of course it did. Like, today that would have been nothing. Half an hour in the shop, but... Yep, no, of course they stuck a gymnast in there upside down and backwards. That's Hollywood, baby.
It's like, Deep Roy is in this movie.
Yeah, and
this is the kind of, thing Deep Roy does.
I saw, they called him the Tin Man in whenever they list Deep Roy, and it's like, I saw the Tin Man, but he didn't move. So what the fuck, did they just shove Deep Roy into this, like, Tin Man statue and have him in the background of the final shots? What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know. Like you do see the Tin Man moving in, like, the finale of the movie, but, like, I don't know why you needed Deep Roy for that.
Yeah, that's just so bizarre. I swear they just shoved him in a can and were like, it's the Tin Man. It's like, why is the legacy of this series abusing little people?
They took a lot of the myths from the first movie way too seriously. I don't know.
Yeah. Jesus.
and eventually we next get to Princess Mombi's castle, the princess of 30 heads, which apparently that actually is in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as, let's be honest, this movie has a lot of problem in terms of scene detail, the fact that they were able to set it up so, like, every one of those heads is an actress, kind of appreciated that.
Oh yeah, no, it's again, like, there is an attention to detail on this, and when they do something like that, it's fantastic. That is a terrifying visual. When they all start screaming, that is, like, that's pure nightmare fuel. But it never kind of comes up again. She grabs a head, sticks to that one the rest of the movie, and you just, this brilliant aspect of her that is literally terrifying. She decapitated every other woman, like, you know, every beautiful woman in Oz, and decided to make their heads hers. That's fucked up. Why doesn't that come up somehow later on? Because it doesn't. It really doesn't.
It does come up towards the finale, but in, let's be honest, like, the laziest way you could do that.
Yeah, like, it should be this brilliant thing that you can explore, like, all the potential with the character. No, we don't have time for that. We don't have the budget for that.
Yeah, but we go on to meet Jack Pumpkinhead, which, if you're a fan of The Nightmare Before Christmas, you're welcome.
Yeah, did it first, haha.
Oh no, Tim Burton has apparently directly credited the character of Jack Pumpkinhead for inspiring the design of Jack Skellington.
I mean, I'm not surprised. It's a perfect design.
Oh, it really is. And then Mombi locks Dorothy in her tower, so because when Dorothy gets older, Mombi wants to take her head and add it to the collection, which, like, of course she does. And this might be my favorite escape plan, just because this is what a 10-year-old comes up with.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's essentially they escape the tower by Dorothy playing God.
Yeah, she puts in some cheat codes, she summons a living bed. The Gump.
The Gump. It's literally tie a bunch of random things together while Dorothy goes off and plays thief.
Yeah. And it is exactly like a child's imagination. So once again, this movie bounces back to, like, maybe it's all in her head, because only a kid could come up with this kind of shit. Which, why'd you have to show your hand before you show this kind of nonsense?
Yeah, God, I truly wish this movie could be remade today with an actual budget. And the next part of Dorothy's journey is almost specifically why. Because we eventually get to the Gnome King, where this film goes black hole levels of insane.
Oh, just, well, first of all, beautiful design choice.
Yeah.
Incredible work for the Gnome King, having him first begin as stop motion and then eventually morph into a stone version of the Burger King. Like the Burger King. It's fantastic. He looks amazing. I love that he kind of resembles an 80s Doctor Who villain, because you can see his eyes.
Yeah,
and like where the makeup stops on his eyes, but the rest of it is this really ultra committed high concept rock man. It's so 80s Who. And of course he's giving it his all.
Oh God, is he ever. And it's so beautiful how over the course of each character has to go into a room of ornaments and guess which one is a transformed Oz resident. And as each of our supporting cast fails, the Gnome King becomes more and more human, because apparently that was his goal the entire time. Again, last second plot that really should not work, but kind of does.
Yeah, probably could have gone into it in more detail, but it's not really harmed-ish.
No. But the transformation is so smooth and so subtle that by the time you actually realize what's happening, you're already invested. And it's like, this doesn't make sense, but it's so cool to look at.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the room itself, the guessing game, is by itself a very terrifying concept of, like, if you get it wrong, you get turned into an inanimate object and spend the rest of eternity like that in the possession of this asshole. Have fun. It's the kind of level of legitimately scary and yet absurd that Oz movies and books are rather known for, where it's like, I shouldn't be afraid of that, but I am.
And finally, it's Dorothy's turn to start guessing, and she gets down to the last guess. And again, solves the problem in the most perfectly childlike way. Like, it's literally, she just closes her eyes, starts spinning, and then just walks, arms out, eyes shut. This is the most random way humanly possible, and how could you not see a 10-year-old doing this?
Oh yeah, just the stupidest bit of, like, modern Disney Star Wars child character force luck. The thing that is getting me about Disney Star Wars now is how it's only always child character, animal friend that you can merchandise, and no matter what, everything goes great because the Force is looking out for them. This kid has the fucking Force, because that's nonsense. Then she talks to a chicken. See, the template.
A chicken who the characters of Oz, the villains at least, are more interested in than they are Dorothy.
Yeah. So, like, Dorothy chooses right, if I recall. She finds the Scarecrow as a green gem when she figures out, oh, everything's green, as in, like, emerald, as in the Emerald City, blah,
yeah.
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's all thematic. And the Gnome King kind of loses his shit and becomes a giant, really awesome-looking, very metal monster.
It's glorious.
And then if what you say is true and the chicken is working for Glenda the Good Witch, then she's clearly also an assassin, because she finally fires out that egg that, to be fair, Dorothy kind of mentioned a bunch of times earlier in the film, being like, you know, do you have an egg for me? I know you've got an egg. Where's that egg? And the chicken at some points is like, oh, I'm going to lose my egg. The egg finally comes out, falls perplexingly into the Gnome King's mouth, and he dies in the most horrific fashion imaginable.
Like, y'all remember when we covered The Black Hole and discussed the ending of that movie where this, it just goes full on Dante's Inferno insane?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, this is in a world where if you throw water at a witch, she literally melts and is screaming as she dies. But there was something oddly, even though this was stop motion, there was something oddly more terrifying about this as his like ego was stripped away with his being. Jesus Christ. What the fuck? So that, again, that is like a 3 body count now, Dorothy. You have killed 3 despots.
I think a part of that horror is from the simple fact that this is a moment with just some of the most glorious stop motion that 80s cinema has ever seen. Possibly cinema in general since the days of Ray Harryhausen. But you add into that that this is also the only moment in the film with an effective use of rear projection in a film that abuses rear projection like there is no tomorrow.
Yeah, no, that did look good. It looked good in the way like 80s films do, but you know, it's not realistic, but it's good. It looks nice. It works. It does what it's supposed to. And it totally takes your mind off the next moment that actually kind of harkens back a bit, because one thing we didn't mention about that awesome Doctor Who looking Gnome King outfit is, he was wearing blazingly bright ruby slippers. Fantastic. Which, and yeah, the ruby slippers.
Yeah, they're the ruby slippers.
He wears them well.
And originally, like in the original version, the Gnome King is wearing a silver belt because the ruby slippers were originally silver. When the Gnome King gets them, he turns them into a belt. But of course, silver wouldn't have shown up all that well on film back in the day.
Yeah, it would just
ruby on like the other hand
slippers. Yeah, ooh, that shit sparkles. But it stands out so glaringly because he's all this one gray color, and then he just has these fabulous shoes on. It's incredible. It's a look.
Oh yeah, no. Oh, it's amazing look that he is clearly quite proud of, and I respect it.
Yeah. So Dorothy gets her Elder Scroll back, that are her ruby slippers, which means, of course, she is now a god.
You know, like you said, like you were about to say, she restores everything. She, with the murder of the Gnome King, I believe in many a story, that is pretty much how you become a god, by killing a god.
Yeah, like, this is the third powerful magic user she has defeated, fourth if you count outsmarting the wizard. She's like Super Sauron. Yeah, Super Saiyan Sauron. I'm pretty sure that there's a great potential like Dark Horse comic out there where you just have Dorothy Gale, because she was raised in like hardship. She's decided like, no, fuck this. I'm going to conquer Oz. And that's what it's called. Like Dorothy the Conqueror. And she just becomes this dark lord.
Yes.
In Gingham.
I mean, If I remember right, I believe video games and possibly several lesser known films have basically done the same thing with Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
So, yes.
That shit's tired. Let's do Dorothy.
oh my God, I want that so much now.
Like Caesar, the people go, "You shall be our king." And she goes, I deny this. I do not want a crown. And she passes it on to the girl from the mental institution, which I don't know. As you say, they didn't do enough work to really connect it throughout. There should have been, like, Tip should have been in this. That would have made sense. For those who don't know, Tip is the secret identity that Ozma is put under. Tip is a boy who is, like, Mombi's prisoner. And at the end, you find out, oh, Tip's actually this princess, Ozma. She's the ruler. And it's got all kinds of great queer, you know, like, identity stuff going on. And this movie does not do it. And it's not only one of those things of, like, I just wanted that one thing. Why would you take that away from me? But also, it would have made more sense to have Ozma maybe appear at the beginning, and then you have Tip, who is part of the party, and then that's where Ozma comes from. Instead, Ozma is in a mirror, and Dorothy just kind of goes, come here. And that's how that's how the movie kind of ends.
Yeah. Well, and, like, even with the way that they do use Ozma in the movie, just going back to those themes of memory and how Mombi and the Gnome King are essentially trying to erase Ozma from existence.
Yeah.
And that you could, that could have been tied back to Dorothy's treatment in the asylum.
Right. Or, like, you know, I know that you saw Ozma in a reflection in the asylum, as well as literally seeing her, yeah, like, as a kid. Pick one. Either she's in the mirror, and anytime you see a scene with a mirror, you see Ozma watching them, or she's just some girl at the asylum who is imprinted on her, on Dorothy, and she makes up this whole, like, oh, at the end, instead of her saving me, I save her. Ha ha ha. And then you find out that the kid's dead. Once again, this kid's dead. That kid, the other kid that went into the river, they're dead.
yeah, exactly. And Dorothy wakes up in the real world. There's a search party in the forest. She hears Toto first.
Yeah.
And then in a nice bit of camera work, we get a first dog perspective of Toto finding Dorothy, which, again, little thing that I kind of enjoyed.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got to bring the dog back in. I understand. We've gone the entire movie without the dog. You're used to the dog. Here's the dog.
Yeah. And, like, it was a nice way to do that. And then at the very end of the movie, when we're in Dorothy's bedroom, we basically get a more subtle version of the ending from Labyrinth.
Yeah, yeah. and while that's, you know, it's, again, commit to it. We have the mirror. They show up in the mirror. Cool. There should have been more of the mirror so that, like, it has more of a standing theme. But the real great thing about the ending is how they just offhandedly are like, the doctor burned to death. Don't worry, we're not gonna send you back. He's dead.
Yeah, like it's offhanded, but it still makes so much sense because, as we've already established early on, he's way too proud of that fucking machine.
Yeah, and, like, there should have been, like, more connections to that. A second pass would have worked.
Yeah.
What does not work? What absolutely does not work is Mombi, the Nurse Ratchet Mombi, being taken away in a paddy wagon. What crime did she commit that the rest of the employees of that hospital did not also commit? Like, did she set the fire? Did she set the fire? Because I don't understand any other aspect. She tried to save a child from drowning, so we better arrest her.
Well, the way that the near drowning plays out, did she actually try to save her?
I want to say that she can claim that. And Dorothy at no point points to her and goes, that bitch tried to drown me.
Because you see the nurse on the riverbank just, like, dramatically reaching out toward the girls without actually trying to grab them.
Oh, absolutely. However, she did nothing that anyone else witnessed that you could lock her up for, that the rest of the employees would not also have, like... Like, those orderlies should have been in there as well, or something. It makes no sense. It's closure that is not earned in any fucking way.
No, it's the only possible explanation that I can come up with, and make no mistake, this does not work, is that the last time we saw Mombi, she was in a cage. And then we see Nurse Wilson being carried off in the paddy wagon, essentially also in the cage. So they're, it's almost like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too by saying, was this in Dorothy's head? Which, again, does not work.
Yeah, it instead makes this really disturbing assertion that things that occur in Oz can affect entirely different people in our universe. So if you have a really shitty day, it's because some version of you in an imaginary place done fucked up.
Pretty much, yeah.
But I am surprised that this film has not, I'm sure by now it has to have made back its money in DVD sales or whatever. It is a minor cult classic. It's memorable. It stays with you, even if in your nightmares. But I also understand why it did not make anywhere near its budget back, because who the fuck was this for?
Yeah, very, very, very true. It's another one of those. I think it was done at the wrong time, because I think you could absolutely do this today. In fact, you know what? I'm going to take that as we'll wrap up as I finish this thought, but I'm going to take that one step further where, like, people always say you can never remake The Wizard of Oz. I say, fuck that. You can absolutely remake it. It cannot be a musical. Give it to A24 and let them go insane.
that would be nice. Like, I am sick of the trend of horror revamps, but seeing as how we already got that in 1985, fucking go at.
Oh yeah, like it doesn't even have to be horror specific. Like with A24, you have films like, of course, Everything Everywhere All at Once, or Love Lies Bleeding that aren't horror specific, maybe horror adjacent, but are both, make no mistake, batshit insane.
Yes. Yeah. No. The absurdity. They're very good at absurdity. And this is dripping absurdity. That would be really interesting to see. I want that. I want that now.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, again, like I said earlier, this movie, give it, like, you could remake Return to Oz, the exact same story, but give it a budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Draw it out a little bit, add some extra elements, maybe some interesting connections. Give it a full 2 hours, even just 17 more minutes, or 7 more minutes, yeah, could have been like the make or break on this. But as I said, like, this movie lives forever in my like youth nightmares, and oddly a connection to a commercial for Wonderful World of Disney on CBC. That's buried far into my brain. But it's memorable. It's experimental. It takes risks. It commits to a lot of insanity in a way that most films would not. I don't know why this light keeps going out. and overall, I would definitely say give it a watch if you have not seen it. It's crazy, but in a good way.
Oh, yeah, and if you are going to watch it and you're not planning to get high while you're watching it, which I really, you probably should, but if nothing else, lay out a bunch of shots in front of you and do a shot every time there's a moment of rear projection on screen for no reason.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You will be shmammered by the end. It's way better than listening to Pink Floyd and watching the original Wizard of Oz. Mostly because this is real, and again, you will get fucked up.
On multiple levels, really.
If you have any suggestions for games to get fucked up watching movies and getting drunk, please email them to us, because we'd love to play them. You can email those to us at
you can reach the show at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. You can find me specifically pretty much anywhere on social media as the Maritime Lord. Instagram and Threads will be your two best bets. Or if you wanted Crash,
I'm available at Friday in Halifax on Twitter and Crash and Burn everywhere else. Next time, Mike's gonna suffer.
So yeah, I was actually just about to say we'll see you in the fall, and next season, of course, Crash will be in control, and then the season after that will be my turn again with a theme that Crash actually accidentally gave a clue to in our Madam Web review. I'll explain that when we're off mic. And so as we go out, do you know what your first movie for next season is going to be?
Yes, actually, I do. Robot Jocks!
Once there was a man who had a little too much time on his hands. He never stopped to think that he was getting older. But when his night came to an end, he tried to grasp for his last friend and pretend that he could wish himself health on a four-leaf clover. He said, is this the return to Oz? The grass is dead, the gold is brown, and the sky has claws. There's a wind-up man walking round and round. What once was Emerald City is now a crystal town. 3 o'clock in the morning, you get a phone call from the queen with 100 heads. She says that they're all dead. She tried the last one on, it couldn't speak, fell off, and now she just a wanders the halls, thinking nothing at all. She said, is this the return to us? The grass is dead, the gold is brown, and the sky has claws. There's a wind-up man walking round and round. What once was Emerald City is now a crystal town. Inside there's some